for, of course, he's for everyone in his ISKCON summit, but he is for everyone because of his level
of consciousness. Universal teacher.
Global preacher. Shaktiyavesh Avatar. Founder of Acharya. This kind of person, as Prabhupada himself said about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, is not the guru of some sectarian institution. This was his 1935 Bombay Vyasa Puja homage at the launch of the Bombay Gaudiya Math. Ladies and gentlemen, this is not the our spiritual master is not the guru of some sectarian institution. He's the Jagat Guru, the spiritual master of everyone. Some follow him willingly, and I forget the rest, but... Okay, so even though the vani, the vibration, Prabhupada's words, are more important than the coming and going of his Vapu, still, when we tell Prabhupada's stories, what are we doing? We're telling more lessons that came out of his manifest lila. Even if the teacher doesn't open his or her mouth, wow, the instruction is there by the behavior, by the example. So I'm thinking of Janmashtami, Vyas Puja, 1972. Was anybody in New Vrindavan in 1972? Were you there? Yeah? Okay. Do you know what the occasion was? There was a 10-day event going on. Do you remember the name of it? Bhagavad Dharma Discourses. Because after 6 years, the movement was incorporated in 66. People saw that we weren't going away. We were something to be reckoned with. I mean, who are these people on the street corners all over America and the world? And what are these books about? And who started all this anyway? So Prabhupada said to some of our leaders, well, let's have a Bhagavad Dharma Discourses. Invite them to New Vrindavan in August, September 1972. And let's see if we can inform them. And a lot of them came. I mean, the New York Times came. And the Mother Earth News, which was at that time the authentic Back to the Land journal. It's become rather upscale since then. And WWVA and Wheeling, West Virginia came, and KDKA Pittsburgh, and let's see, the local congressman came, and some academics came, and they came to meet His Divine Grace. So, in sandwich, right in the middle of the Bhagavad Dharma discourses, are two killer events. That's not the right word. Two signature events of the year, Janmashtami and Vyasa Puja, the two double tapasya challenge days, right? So, in front of Sri Sri Radha Vrindavan Chandra down at Bahulagon Farm, we had a midnight RT, His Divine Grace is attending, and then after the RT is over, what does Prabhupada say? We were all ready to break fast, right? And what does Prabhupada say? So, where's Krishna Bhu? Prabhupada wants to hear about the birth of Lord Krishna. He's ready, you know? And so, you know, us neophytes are, oh, okay. So we get the Krishna book. And so there was a squadron of sannyasis sitting there. And so they all took turns passing around the Krishna book. Started at 12:30, the birth of Lord Krishna. 12:45, we start swaying, and we're trying to keep awake. And with every page, Prabhupada's sitting up straighter, and he's responding to every little thing that happens, and he's making all these eye gestures and expressions. 12:45, 1 a.m. We're starting to really, really sway, and we can see the dandas going like this. And Prabhupada's becoming more and more. And 1:15, 1:30, I'm like on the ropes, you know, against some wall. And you see the dandas are like 1:45, as Divine Grace surveys the wreckage. Hunger, fatigue, thirst, they may bother others, but I'm going to sit here with rapt attention and hear you, dear Sukadeva Goswami. So Prabhupada was like that. Okay, the next day, Vyasa Puja. the day broke, typical New Vrindavan, mist in the lowlands, in the valleys and the hills. And so thick in New Vrindavan, it looks like the ocean of milk. And so we start to make our way as the sun rises toward the meridian. It's burning through all that mist. And then we're all heading up the hill. Behind Bahulabam, there's this makeshift pavilion the devotees have constructed. And there's a Vyasasan constructed, nice, crushed velvet cushion. You've all seen the picture, but you probably don't remember or didn't know what it was. Prabhupada sitting on a red Vyasasan, and behind him there's greenery. And he's sitting in a corner of that. I know you've seen the picture, but I can't describe it anymore. So, and then next to the Vyasasana is this big wide stage. Sri Sri Radhadamodar, Jagannath Baladev, Subhadra Maharani, I believe from the Lake Cunnington Gurukula, I believe. Maybe it was Baltimore. No? Okay, I think it was Baltimore. Anyway, that's speculation. Sri Sri Radhadamodar were next to Srila Prabhupada. And we had trekked up there to wait for Srila Prabhupada to arrive at high noon. And who's leading the kirtan? The legendary Vishnuswami. Vishnujanaswami. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. He's leading us in a svarga, a heavenly kirtan, right? And we're all in the celestial spheres. And then Hayagriva's yellow Volkswagen starts winding up the hill toward the pavilion. And out steps His Divine Grace. And he comes in front of the Vyasasan, paces dandavats to the deities, hops up on the Vyasasan, and he starts joining. He's also following Vishnujan Maharaj's lead. And then he steals the lead. He steals the lead. If you've seen Yadavarpa's following Srila Prabhupada DVD series, this is documented. I'm speaking, and Satyanarayan is speaking, and Satyanarayan says, and then when Prabhupada stole the lead from Vishnujan, we all went absolutely mad. I remember what happened when Prabhupada's voice rang out. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. You know, we stood up and we just involuntarily started moving toward Prabhupada, and we're trying to sing, but we're crying. It was as though Sri Sri Radhadamodar and Prabhupada had opened up the spiritual sky, and we're just flooding the place with Krishna praying, not considering who was fit or who was unfit. We were just moving toward Prabhupada, and we were like in trance. And all of a sudden, you hear Prabhupada's voice stop the kirtan. And then he says, Gao Vishnupada Prabhu. He says the Prema Dhvani prayers, and we all kind of just drop to the grass and swoon. We're literally swooning. And then he starts giving a Vyasa Puja address. And if you go to YouTube, and you type in 1972, New Vrindavan, Vyasa Puja address, you can hear this address. It was recorded, luckily. And Prabhupada he starts by saying this, ladies and gentlemen, I thank you very much for coming to this Vyasa Puja celebration. Of course, those who are my students, they know what is this Vyasa Puja, but those who are not my students, you may not understand. And who is Prabhupada talking to? He's talking to in the evening news, he's talking to the New York Times, he's talking to the Mother Earth News, he's talking to the professors. So he wants to demystify this whole thing. He wants to bring it right down to earth so they can get it. And so Prabhupada's starts talking about how the spiritual master, he's just like a mailman. Prabhupada said, post peon, right? He's the mailman. And it was a perfect analogy because everyone loves the mailman, right? Neither rain nor sleep nor dark at night can deter this noble postman from his appointed rounds, right?
So he's really giving like an all-American analogy. He just delivers a letter. He may be so unqualified in so many ways, but if he just delivers the letter intact, doesn't add anything, subtract, he's a bona fide mailman. Similarly, I'm just delivering the message of Krishna. And then Prabhupada brought it down even lower. I mean, even more lower. He said, actually, the spiritual master is the dog of God. And he said, God is the biggest. Krishna is the biggest. Even to be the big man of this world, you can't just meet him. He's got an army of secretaries and assistants and an organization. You can't meet him. But if by chance you meet, and Prabhupada always said, Mr. Ford, Mr. Rockefeller. He always said that in America. He didn't say Tata or Birla or Dalmia, all these people from India. He knew his audience. So he said, Mr. Ford, Mr. Rockefeller. If you happen to see Mr. Ford in a park, walking his dog, and if you give him then his dog, Prabhupada said, 2 cent lozenge, a 2 cent lozenge. Very easily, Mr. Ford is pleased because he's thinking, oh, you must love me because you love my dog. Right? Love me, love my dog. So Prabhupada said, I'm the dog of God. It's very difficult to approach Krishna, but it's very easy to please me. So right on cue, Bhavalashva Prabhu, my grandbrother, said, how can we please you, Srila Prabhupada? Jai Krishna. And that was it. That was the end of the address. Prabhupada got up to the asasana, paid dandavats, a big kirtan struck up, and the cameras are still going, you know, and Prabhupada drives away, and then the kirtan ends, and what happens? We're left with an empty asasana, and we're left with the Sri Sri Radha Galadhar and the Jagannath deities, and in front of the deities, the breadth or the width of the stage was a big Vyasa Puja cake. You remember this? The cake? Yeah. The cake. I mean, the New Vrindavan ladies, they spent days baking this cake and constructing and putting it together. And so, what do we do? Well, I myself, I remember looking at a corner of the cake with a lot of icing and punch. And we all just charged that cake. And I grabbed the corner of it. And I took it like a halfback, you know, and I started running broken field through a gauntlet of brahmacharis. And around the pavilion, it was a slope. It was the top of a hill. So this scenario was enacted all over the hill. We were running, people were running with cake, and others were chasing the people who had it. And I was tackled by 3 other brahmacharis. So we rolled down the hill. I came out of the bottom, and the cake was under me. So who ate the cake? The ants ate the cake. Now maybe the New York Times and Mother Earth News and WWBA and the congressmen and the academics visiting, maybe they didn't understand the purport we were giving to Prabhupada's beautiful Vyasa Puja address. Maybe they didn't understand that, but Prabhupada understood, because Prabhupada had gone in the walks back where he was staying in Madhuban, which is now the entrance to the palace, the entrance walkway. There's a little wall, and then that's where Prabhupada was staying, Madhuban. There's only a plaque on a rock there now, but Prabhupada stayed in this little simple cabin. So Prabhupada said to his servant Nanda Kumar, so, there's some cake. There's some cake. Oh, I'll go get you some, Prabhupada. I'll be right back. I'm going to go in the box. I'm going to go back. So, you know, he gets there. He comes, not a soul around. The place is completely deserted. And not a smudge or crumb of cake is there. And Nanda Kumar is thinking, oh my God. They ate all of Prabhupada's cake. So he gets in the car, goes back, runs in. Srila Prabhupada, the devotees ate your cake. So Prabhupada is so tolerant, so kind. What's Prabhupada's response? That's all right. Make another one. He understands. He understood how out of control we were. He knows his audience. So that's the message I left, Leela. Know your audience. Know your audience.
There's so many examples of that. When the Detroit Temple opened up in 1976, was anybody there in Davis Adam? When the Detroit Temple opened, you were there? No, I see a lady making her garland, I guess.
The Ford Mansion. There was a temple there before, but then they moved to the...
Yeah, there was the Forest, and then there was Jefferson, and then there's Davis Adam. Fisher Mansion. But what's the name of that road? Anyway, yeah, so 1975, you may know the story. The devotees were looking for a new temple, and they found this abandoned mansion. I mean, it was listed with a realtor, but it had just been vacant for years. This was a complete palace built in the 1920s by one of the autodidacts, Lawrence P. Body by Fisher, who made his fortune making auto bodies during the big, the golden era of the old cars. Henry Ford, the great grandson of Henry Ford, tells us all about his great grandfather and how at the end of his life, Henry Ford was lamenting how he made his fortune because he changed the landscape of America for the worse. And his last project was, I forget the name of it, there's this project in Detroit, which was glorifying how America was before the mass production of the automobile. Anyway, so the devotees are looking around for a place, and Prabhupada visits the temple on Jefferson, and the devotees take Prabhupada to this Fisher Mansion with the realtors. And Prabhupada, now this was built for $1 million in the 1920s. So you can imagine how much it was worth then, in the 1970s. So they're touring the mansion. Each room, Larry Fisher, he built it for his wife. And each room was like a masterpiece of different, from materials from different parts of the world. So everything was imported. It was like super opulent. And he had a ballroom that had three, like arches too. And the sky was duplicating, you know, how the sun rises and high noon and sunset. So they did, you have all these rich friends over and have these wild parties. So it was super opulent. And even though it had been vacant for years, Prabhupada confided to the devotees as they were going through with the realtors, each room is worth the price. They were asking only $400,000, which was you know, a steal compared to what it was even built for. Prabhupada said each room was worth the price. But then when they sit down and negotiate, Prabhupada's opening gambit is this. So, you are a monk. You can donate. You can donate. So the realtors practically lost their life here. I mean, this lady's, he can't say that, you know. He can't say that, John. And then Prabhupada assured them, oh, that's okay. And so they start, you know, haggling price, this and that. And Prabhupada finally got them down to 300,000 cash. Now, Prabhupada didn't have 300,000 cash. So he turns to Ambarish and says, so you can help? So Ambarish put up half, and my god sister, Lekha Shivanti, she put up the other half, because her parents died in a very suspicious plane crash, because just as Ambarish was the great-grandson of Henry Ford from management side of the auto industry, so Lekha Shivanti was the daughter of a famous labor leader named Walter Reuther, who was kind of like the Gandhi of the American labor movement. He was the one that stood up to management and finally got a decent life for the workers at the cost of his life. Somebody was always trying to kill him. So Lekha Shivanti, she took all of the life insurance policy, her half, her and her sister split it, and she just gave it all to Prabhupada. And then, after they purchased, Ambarish spent $1 million of his own money just to fix the place up. Because it's sitting on the Detroit River, so Prabhupada said, so you can have a restaurant and they can sail up down the river with their yachts, park their yachts, and come in and have a world-class meal. Okay, so there was a grand opening in 76, I think it was in June.
And so on management side, Aberration invites all the auto aristocrats on management side. And Lenka Shravanti, all the big wigs in the labor movement come. And they come. You know, these are people who probably wouldn't get within 100 miles of Hare Krishna temple ordinarily, because they're in their own little, you know, world of false prestige. But they decided to come to see what the Krishnas had done with Larry Fisher's old place. It was kind of a lark, you know. Let's go see what the Krishnas have done. So they come, you know, the men in their big suits, and I don't think they had tails, but black tie, you know, kind of thing. The ladies in the big hair and the gowns, you know, and the pearls. And they come to the temple for the grand opening, and they want to meet the guru. And there's pictures of this, and there's recordings of this too. So they're ushered into Prabhupada's quarters, and there's nice seats available, but also some of them really want the full experience of Krishna consciousness. So you see some of these people in their fancy clothes sitting on the floor cross-legged. Prabhupada's behind his low desk, as he always is. He's very relaxed, and he welcomes them. Now what's he going to say to people who made their fortune exploiting people? I mean, they had to discover early on in the game of the mass production of the automobile, people bought a lot of cars, and then they stopped buying cars because they made them too well. They realized that if we're going to sell cars, keep selling cars, we've got to have planned obsolescence here. We've got to build in the break, you know, so people will have to keep buying cars. So how do you relate to people who are big-time capitalist exploiters? Like, what do you say? Well, Prabhupada put them completely at ease. He started talking about when he was a young man selling pharmaceuticals for Dr. Bose's laboratories. Dr. Bose, Harichandra Bose, he was a pioneer in pharmaceuticals in India in the early 20th century. And Prabhupada was his best salesman. So Prabhupada said, so I had a car to service my accounts. And I didn't personally drive the car, but I had an assistant drive the car. I think it was an old Buick. An old Buick. So what Prabhupada did was, to put to the ease, he started describing everything that was going wrong with the car. You know, the steering this, and the carburetor that, and the wheels. And every time Prabhupada described the problem, you know, they started slapping their knee. Oh yeah, we know that one. You know, we know how that goes bad. And this goes, and then, you know, everything, and the brakes, and the, you know, the transmission, and this goes on and on. And every time Prabhupada mentions something, you know, they're cracking up. So Prabhupada had them in the palm of his hands because they're thinking, this Swami's cool. He knows cars. Well, Prabhupada didn't really know cars, but he had a car, and he knew what went wrong with it. Right? So, just when they're, you know, in the palm of, he had them in the palm of his hand, what does Prabhupada say? So, the body is like a car. The body is like a car. He's giving them KC-101. We're not the body. And here's how he does it. So he's describing, you know, how it was the horses. He goes right to the Upanishads. You know, this Upanishadic metaphor, how the horses are the power. So now it's horsepower with engines, but it's the same idea. So the horses are like the senses, or the horsepower. The reins are like the mind, like the steering wheel. The intelligence is the driver. And the passenger is the soul. So just as the passenger in the chariot or in the car, he's not the car, he's simply in the car. So we're simply riding around in these vehicles, Yantra, Rudhani, Maya. And those people, they got it. At least for that time, they understood, yeah. You know, the passenger's not the car, he's in the car. So that's Prabhupada's compassion. He's going right where they are, cars, and he's leading them by the hand to Krishna Consciousness 101. So it's a good lesson of how to relate to people. Because, first of all, we have to know something about who we're talking to before we can really know how to speak to them. Right? And Prabhupada was expert at that. So, let's see here. How are we doing? 5:06. Starting with 5:15. Got 9 more minutes? Okay. Well, I think I'll end with one story that I told at Ben Salem. It's 5:15, right?
5:30 is
5:30. Oh, okay. Well, you've heard the story. The Dallas story, 3 ways to fly. Should I tell that again?
Please.
Am I not? It's a good one.
Okay.
1972, also, yeah, after New Vrindavan, actually. Right after New Vrindavan, August, September, and then Prabhupada was scheduled to go fly down to Dallas to check up on the one and only ISKCON school at the time, our first attempt at a Gurukula. So before he went to Dallas, they drove him to Pittsburgh, the airport, and Prabhupada took in a... we had a transcendental rock opera back in the old days. We called it the circus or the roadshow. We had different names for it. But it was the fall and the redemption of the Jiva soul. And it was put on in Pittsburgh in a mosque, the Syria Mosque. So Rupanuga Maharaj at the time took Prabhupada in. Prabhupada sat down and just took it in. I mean, it was, if you've heard the recording, you know the recording. Yeah, the old Mangalananda recordings, old songs. But Prabhupada couldn't recognize the devotees as he knew them because they were all, you know, had painted faces and all kinds of wild costumes on. So Prabhupada leaned over to Rupanuga Maharaj and said, "Are those our men?" "Oh, yes, Srila Prabhupada. There's Gaudi, there's Vishnu John, there's Hari Kesh, there's Aja. There's Hasya Brahmi," you know, he's pointing out, and Prabhupada's, And then intermission comes, and Prabhupada gets up and he leaves. I don't think he knew, I think he thought it was over. Maybe he had enough, I don't know. But that endeavor was a good example of Prabhupada letting us dovetail our propensities, because we came, most of us, out of the counterculture, which had rock operas. And Prabhupada approved us putting Krishna consciousness in that idiom, in that medium. And then it sort of ran its course, and then Vishnu Jan Maharaj asked Prabhupada in a letter, he said, "You know, we think this roadshow has ran its course. We have our eyes on some land in Long Island. We'd like to take the troop and settle down in Long Island. Is that all right with your divine grace?" Prabhupada said, and Prabhupada knew there's nothing wrong in principle with making what Vishnu Jan called a yoga village. There's nothing in principle wrong with it, but Prabhupada also knew we weren't mature enough to handle it. So he said, "No, better you not buy this land and make a yoga village. It will become another hippie addition." Because it was only a few years earlier that Prabhupada had found most of this in that culture. So, similarly, a couple of years later, there was another initiative, actually, I'm thinking of, that I was involved in also. Those of us who were around then may remember the Ungodly Trust Party for Purified Leaders. Okay, in Atlanta. Balabhant was running for mayor, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was in Gainesville, Florida, and I'm a Narendra. My temple president was running for mayor also. So, this was very exciting to us because, and you can hear on some recordings, Prabhupada bragging about the devotees. Now they're preaching in the political arena with shaved head and flag, Prabhupada said, and tilak and suit and tie. And, So Amarendra ran for mayor. He didn't come in last. He came in fifth out of a field of 6. The only candidate that we beat was the anarchist candidate. He was for no government. I guess he was the anti-mayor or something, you know, the Libertarian Party or something. So, but even though it was exciting at first, we weren't mature enough to handle it. Nothing wrong in principle. Now we have a Vaishnavi in the U.S. Congress, right? Tulsi Gabbard. Mm-hmm. He took the oath on the deal. Yeah, she's a good preacher. But back
then here's what was going on.
I remember they used to congregate down in Peninsula because Amarendra had been a real firebrand in his student days, and he had the scars to prove it from being clubbed, you know, by the police for protesting, you know, too strongly. So they would have these meetings, our Ngadi Trust leaders, Balabhanta and Upanuga and Amarendra. And I think Shesha was attending some of these meetings too. I think Nalini Kanta was there. He was running for something in Tucson. So sometimes the meetings would go late, you know, and the next morning us rank and file folk would say, "So what did you talk about? What's the next plan?" So I remember one time one of the leaders said, "Well, Prabhu, you know, in Rajavidya, King of Knowledge, Srila Prabhupada says that the whole world is being controlled by man-eating rakshasas. So the day may come, Prabhu, when we may have to assassinate some of these man-eating rakshasas." It was getting pretty heavy, pretty intoxicated, right? We were, you know, the deity worship was suffering, book distribution was suffering, our sadhana was suffering. Prabhupada knew that. He always knew what was going on. So we didn't win any elections that cycle. We did a lot of preaching. And then Upanuga Maharaj asked Prabhupada, he said, "So, for the next election cycle, Srila Prabhupada, we need a grant from the DDT for $30,000. And Prabhupada said, "No, we don't mind getting the post, but not at the cost of our God consciousness," was his divine grace's response. Yeah. So Prabhupada, he would try things. This is a lesson too. In Prabhupada's Leela, we find Prabhupada experimenting. We were his guinea swans, to be generous. Guinea swans. He experimented with us. Like in the beginning, if you've read the Lilamrita, he was suggesting on the first initiation, Eve, the first initiation at 26 second hour was Vyasa Puja Day. But the day before, Prabhupada was talking about initiation and how many, many devotees in the Gaudiya Mada, they chanted 64 rounds. And the devotees were saying, "64 rounds? How could anybody chant 64 rounds? I think you can chant 32 rounds, Prabhupada. 32 rounds? That would take all day, Swamiji. 16 rounds, minimum, not Prabhupada." So recalling that sequence a little later, the late Brahmananda Prabhu, who was the first temple president of this kind, said he was recalling that with Prabhupada at 61 second hour in the second New York temple. And he asked Prabhupada, "Srila Prabhupada, why did you do that? You started really high and then you came down to 16. Why did you do that?" And Prabhupada responded, "Oh, I was just seeing what you people could do. I was experimenting. I just wanted to see what you could do." And he would try things, and then he would palena purachiyate, he would judge the thing by the result. He was always doing that. He was being creative and yet faithful. If something didn't work, then he would stop it. So that's a big lesson for us, right? If we want to know how to introduce people to Krishna consciousness according to what Prabhupada called time, country, and candidate, we have to actually get to know the audience to see what's practical. And the way Prabhupada was able to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world was because he was able to take timeless principles and creatively adapt them according to time, country, candidate. If you want to see that phrase, you look, it's in the Gita too, but it's in CC, Bhagya 23.105 purport, and Bhagavatam 4.854. One size did not fit all in his divine graces spreading all over the world. It was creatively adapted according to time, country, Canada. Usually we say time, place, and people. A big lesson from that, you know. And, okay, let's do the Dallas one because it's so fun. When Prabhupada flew to Dallas, it wasn't his first visit to Dallas, but it was, he had come to inspect the Gurukula, but also to install the deities. Shri Shri Radha Kala Chanji, have you seen those deities? Yeah. Big
dark, briny, Texas-sized deities. This is a deity from Texas, you know. And a fair complexion, right around like this. So the first thing that happened was right when Prabhupada flew in to Love Field, it was before Dallas-Fort Worth, the big airport. It was Love Field. And the leaders ushered Prabhupada into this VIP room. And usually when Prabhupada would address the press, he would say, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for coming, etc., etc. This is a great movement, and like that. But Prabhupada, in this case, he just hopped up on the makeshift Vyasasa, and without any preliminaries, His Divine Grace said, so there are three ways to fly. There are three ways to fly. This is the first thing he says, right? And I was standing next to the reporter for the Dallas Morning News, which is the most important paper in the Southwest. And I could see her writing on her pen, three ways to fly. And she was gunning for a story. She was gunning for Prabhupada. She wanted to get her angle. So Prabhupada says, first of all, formerly, yogis knew how to fly by vibrating mantra. So I can see it writing down, M-A-N-T-R-A, mantra. And Prabhupada explained that they could dip in the Ganges up in Haridwar, and they'd come out and pray out, Trivani. You know, they have the Kumbh Mela. And how do they do this? Well, they access the Super Soul, who's present everywhere in all points in time and space. And by pleasing the Super Soul can transport them instantly. You know, better than Star Trek. It was instant. So, mantra, that was one. And then Prabhupada said, and then they knew the art of training, Prabhupada said, pigeons. But the Sanskrit word in the Bhagavatam is kapota. It's a kind of bird, some celestial bird, that can transport people. They go in formation and you just ride on this magic pigeon carpet, you know, from place to place. Just like Brahma rides on a swan. Pigeons. Of course, when Prabhupada said pigeon, everyone was thinking, you know, downtown Philly, anywhere, these guys wandering around. Pigeon. And so the reporter's writing, P-I-G-E-O-N. Now she's, I can see she's building up to some big question, right? And then there's Vishin, Prabhupada said, Vishin, Yantra. So the lady raised her pen. Swami, were these ways to fly more efficient than today's journey? Prabhupada says, oh yes. For one thing, there we go, and he leaned over to Satsuru Maharaj and he said, how do you say that, Satsuru? Jackass? Hijacks, Prabhupada, hijacks. Yes, who would all hijacks? Now this is significant, because Prabhupada was up on the news. From his BTG days. He was doing BTG in India for years. He was always up on the news because he would offer spiritual solutions to material problems. He was very practiced at that. And Prabhupada knew that very recently were the first hijacking of planes, the first skyjacks. In fact, there was one horrendous incident in that summer of 72 where the Palestinian people, the PLO, the Palestine Liberation Organization, had gone into the Olympic Village in Munich and blown away all the Israeli athletes. It was like a mass murder. It was a big thing. So Prabhupada knew that to get away, the PLO had commandeered a plane to try to go to some safe haven for asylum. Ludo Haida. So this lady, not to be outdone, she thought she had her Trump question, that checkmate. Well, if you know all these ways to fly, Swami, then why did you fly American Airlines today? Because Dallas is the hub of American Airlines, right? Without missing a heartbeat, Prabhupada said, to be one with you. Because Prabhupada, as I said in Ben Salem, he didn't just answer the content of questions. He answered the intent of the questioner. He answered the mentality, the consciousness behind the question. So
So when Prabhupada said to be one with you, he completely charmed this lady. And she turned to me and she said, you know, I like that man. I like Prabhupada, he's so kind. Even though she was a challenger, he gave her an opportunity to have a favorable impression of himself and the devotees. Because he knew what she was and he knew what she could become. Like all of us, right? Prabhupada would see right to the soul. Yeah. And then we all went to the temple. And I was the last one back to the temple because I was in this old rickety school bus, which was out of the line, and that's a whole other story. I was the last one. And so that hall, if you've been to Kalachandri's palace recently, there's still a big hallway between the temple and the restaurant. So there was that hall still there. Oh, that's, you know, it's all transformed now. So before I ran into the temple room, which was just a basketball court at that point, just a former basketball court, I spotted Prabhupada's shoes all the way down the end of the hall at the other entrance. So I used to play baseball, so I sprinted down the hall like I was stealing second base, right? And I slid on my belly right up in front of Prabhupada's, the back of Prabhupada's, you know, those shoes he used, those canvas shoes he wore. And I wanted to know what it meant, lotus feet. And this is the kind of people Prabhupada's initiating, people that, you know. And took a big whiff. It's true, lotus feet. It didn't smell so good, you know, like a heavenly lotus wing. And then I went in the temple room, just in time to hear Prabhupada answer a question from a very challenging Christian who was out to intimidate Prabhupada. So what is this love of God you're feeling? So here's an example of answering the intent. And Prabhupada just said, that I am not afraid of anyone. That was good. Before the installation, of course, there's a whole pastime of Prabhupada becoming completely disturbed by what was going on because my god sister Janava had unauthorizedly repainted the deities he had shipped. He had shipped, I think it was from Jaipur. And he was so disturbed to see the deities had been repainted because he hadn't been asked permission for that. And when Janava tells the story now, you know, she's in ecstasy telling the story, but she was just like a 20-year-old girl, but she was just Prabhupada screaming at her, you know, why did you do this? This is nonsense. And all she could say was, Bharadraj, 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 I'm your spiritual master, and I'm right in front of you, and you're telling me Bharadraj. So Prabhupada said to Shyamasundar, pack our bags, Shyamasundar, we're leaving. They're not ready for these deities. And then Satsuru Maharaj came in and he kind of pacified Prabhupada. And so the show went on, but it was quite a stormy day or two before the installation. Before the installation, there was a initiation. And Prabhupada said it was Vyasasam, and he was just overseeing it, and there was a Ritvik priest, I think it was Pradumna, doing this fire ceremony and chanting the mantras. I could see Prabhupada singing something to himself. So I snuck around to the Vyasasana, kind of diagonal to him. I kind of cocked my ear, and I hear Prabhupada singing.
Chintamani prakara sabbasu kalpa vrikkara kaprateshu.
He's singing the whole Brahma Samhita. It was so sweet. And then Prabhupada's overseeing the ceremony, and then something's wrong. Prabhupada didn't want the show to go on. He wanted to stop the whole thing to correct something. But no one knew what Prabhupada wanted. Shyamasundara didn't know. Pradyumna didn't know. Satsuru Maharaj didn't know. And then Prabhupada started looking around the room at all of us as if to say, do you know what I need? Do you know what I want? And then his glance fell on me. And I was sitting right above where Acharya Prabhu was. And as soon as Prabhupada looked at me, I started grinning like an idiot. As a matter of fact, that was the message I got from Srila Prabhupada. You're an idiot. And that made me grin more. Yes, you love me, Srila Prabhupada, and I'm an idiot. Jai! And he just looked really disgusted. He started looking at other people. And no one knew what Prabhupada wanted, so he just let the show go on, finished. Then he got off the seat, and he walked behind the stage, just a little And then the conch blew, and the curtains opened, and there's Srila Prabhupada on stage. He's doing the inaugural aarti for Sri Sri Radhakala Janji. We never expected it. Now, the deities hardly have anything on. They're just draped with a little silk. And in back of the deities, where there used to be a pale green cinder block sort of back to the basketball court walls, there's just a white sheet. So the deities come shooting out of that background, you know, big Rani Kalachanji and petite Radharani, and then there's Prabhupada doing ashram for the aarti. And I'll never forget how Prabhupada did that aarti. Every time I do an aarti, I think of how deliberately, meticulously, meditatively, Srila Prabhupada is meditating on the divine forms of the deities, because he's seeing the deities as Radha and Krishna, you know, not the way I may see it, something else. And then when he offered the water, and then he offered to the devotee, and then he did something I never saw before. He walked out to the front of the stage, he took the water from the water conch, put it in his palms, and he just started throwing it at all of us. And we were all catching the drops. And I remember it kind of in slow motion. We were like Chikora birds, you know, we were just opening our mouths and catching the drops. And I was thinking of the first Gaurvastikam we sing from Mangala Aarti. The spiritual master is receiving benediction from the ocean of mercy, just as a cloud pours water on the fires to extinguish it. So that's how it felt. It felt like we were catching these mercy drops from Prabhupada's lotus hand. That's my name. Well, there's one more little memory. Prabhupada was lecturing on second canto, and the verse from the second canto where it ends, Griheshu Grihamedinam, the life of the materialistic householder is spent all day chasing money and at night and sleeping in sex. And then Prabhupada gave a class on that verse, and he walked out of the temple room across the way toward the other building, still called the sanctuary, and there was a tree in the courtyard that had been cut down, this nice, fine, spreading oak, because it had been leaning on the building. And the devotees thought that the tree was hurting the building. Because Prabhupada stopped and said, who has done this? And then the late Narayan Prabhu said, oh, Srila Prabhupada, we cut down the tree because it was leaning on the building. We thought it would hurt the building. And Prabhupada said, you Americans, you have no qualification. If you don't, all you have is money. If you don't like something, you cut it down with your money. Otherwise, you're useless. You know, Prabhupada said that. Useless. So, and then he kept walking, and as he kept walking, I heard Prabhupada say under his breath, he was applying it to us. Right? Useless, materialistic people. So, 5:29. The last time we saw Srila Prabhupada was in Los Angeles. I don't have time to tell all of it, but it was very heavy, 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 heavy duty. Actually, I'm privileged to have witnessed two heavy things that Prabhupada did. In 1970, when I was a brand new bhakta, I was all of 5 weeks old. I went to the New Vrindavan Dharmashtami Festival, where you may have heard the preaching was that Prabhupada was God. And the way Prabhupada uprooted that Mayavad weed right in the heart of his movement was spectacular. He expelled the people who were preaching that. He expelled them with the proviso. They could come back with a proviso that they each opened up a center. They were rookie sannyasis. Each opened up a center, make devotees, and preach the right stuff. Then you can come back in the association of devotees. Prabhupada just kicked them out right on the spot. Suddenly and swiftly. Similarly, in 76 in LA, when Prabhupada came to town, it was Prabhupada uprooting us a hundred weed right in the heart of his movement. The faux GBC, GBC standing for Gopi Baba Club. Yeah, it was really intense because just a few months earlier, Prabhupada had, you know, on his order, 17 of his books had been produced in 2 months at lightning speed. That no one thought was possible. And that's where impossible was a word in the fool's dictionary came out of that.
And I got there just after what the devotees were still speaking about in hushed tones as the rush. 24/7 production line. The BBT devotees were allowed to take prasad, sleep, chant 16 rounds, go to Mangalarti. Other than that, it was round the clock shifts. 2 books a week? Insane. At one point in the rush, Prabhupada said, or the managers of the BBT came to Prabhupada and said, Srila Prabhupada, these books are being produced so fast, there are mistakes. There's going to be mistakes. Prabhupada didn't care. His response, in so many words, was, fix it later, get them out, get them out, get them out. So, but the way Prabhupada dealt with, and so what happened was, some of the BBT devotees, they were the first to see the copy, you know, from these CC purports. And there's a lot of intimate, you know, Radha Krishna Leela there. And so I got there just after the rush, and they're still kind of basking, you know, in this nectar of Leela. And they invited me to a CC reading. I thought, oh, this is nice. I get to hear this, the freshly produced CC. But I knew something was fishy, because as soon as I went to the meeting, I heard things like, this is the real nectar. It's way beyond the Gita. You know, the Gita is just about the 3 modes for rule. This is the real nectar. They were actually minimizing the importance of the Bhagavad Gita. And that was my book. I was memorizing the Gita. They're not in my book. You know, I was probably around chapter 13 by that time. I made a vow to memorize all the verses of the Gita because I could see the only person who really knew what was going on in this moment was His Divine Grace, and we're all speculating like mad. I may not understand the Gita, but I'm just going to at least memorize the verses. So they're bad-mouthing my book. I didn't go back to the meeting. Prabhupada came to town, and there was word. Word got to His Divine Grace that His Bhagavad Gita, as it is, was being minimized, the importance of it in favor of CC. This is what Prajumna told Prabhupada, as Prabhupada was just about to take the first bite of his breakfast. You can read about this in Transcendental Bhagavatam or Ashari people. That prasad never reached Prabhupada's mouth. He just put it down, slammed his hand on the table and said, call all these leaders, call all the visiting leaders, call the leaders of this group. We're going to settle this right now. And I had a big thing. What is the first thing the Prabhupada said to them? By the way, we're running into the RT. What's going on here? It's just a feast. That's right. Just a feast. You're probably wondering why I'm still talking, right? Okay, I'm just going to wrap it up. So, the first thing Prabhupada said to them, why are you jumping like monkeys? And they started arguing with Prabhupada. But Prabhupada, you say, Lord Chaitanya said, this is the topmost. Are you topmost? First deserve, then desire. First Kurukshetra Leela. Jai Bhagavad Gita. Then Rasa Leela. Prabhupada told him, but if you persist in this, you will ruin your spiritual life. Unfortunately, most of them didn't heed what His Divine Grace said. And therefore they didn't ruin their spiritual lives. Okay, I'm going to end, but just know that when you hear Prabhupada Leela, just look for the lessons in the Leela. It's so relishable hearing about His Divine Grace, but look for the lessons in the Leela, and we'll be talking more about that. Again, you're all invited Wednesday, Thursday night, 7 p.m. right here. We're going to do 2 lessons from the Tambhuracharya series. Thank you very much. Shubhropa. Kiya.